December when we recently had a four-day seminar on Varnashrama. This documentary was made over a period of about 6 months by a team of devotees from Secunderabad. We have established what is called the Varnashram Research Team. They're engaged in various kinds of research, including doing documentaries of this nature. More documentaries are on their way as well. After the presentation, we will have an opportunity to have some discussions if anyone has any questions in relation to the documentary itself or in regards to the Varnashrama mission in general. We'd like to also point out that on my left here we have a book table. Some pamphlets are there. Pamphlets can be taken. Feel free to take any of the pamphlets. And there's a nice photo album describing various Varnashrama projects around the world. And we have a few books, some recent publications regarding Varnashrama. So if you have any questions, please keep them in mind right after the presentation. And also, we'd like to remind everyone that after we finish both our documentary and question and answer, there will be another brief presentation, documentary, given by His Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhu in regards to the big temple or Vedic planetarium which is planned in Srinath Mayapur. That video is quite short, I understand maybe 7 or 8 minutes. And in all likelihood also, Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhu will be happy to clarify any questions if there are any. Basically, this documentary is having interviews, a number of interviews. The devotee is sitting behind the computer here, Harsha. Prabhu has been very much instrumental in putting this documentary together, along with a team of devotees. So questions could be directed to him actually as to how they put this together. And there are a good number of, we could say, experts in the field who have been interviewed in different places in India after attending some conferences on cow protection, etc. like that. We should keep in mind, this is the last point I will make here, that the whole Varnashrama mission actually begins with cow protection. Protection of brahmanas and protection of cows. We all know, this is written in our books, in Srila Prabhupada's books, the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the importance of brahmanas and cows. And of the two, Krishna actually is more dear to the cows. So especially here we are in Vrindavan Dham, the actual place where Krishna manifested his lila, his pastimes, as a cowherd boy with Balaram. So this is the first documentary which we felt was important to present to underline the urgency and the importance of giving protection to our mother cow. Cows and bulls. When we say cow, we should also in our mind understand that we're talking about bulls and bullocks as well. So the mics are, the speakers are, the sound should come quite all right. And sit back, relax, and hear the interview, the narration, Hare Krishna.
Thank you. happens to know Carl as the monk. Carl has been the center of ancient Indian civilization from many millennia, a part and parcel of the society, a well-constituted progressive society. India, being colonized from centuries, did not lose its independence for the very reason that villages were self-sufficient and cows formed the most fundamental part of self-sufficient living. How then, something so precious be foregone, something unimaginable and repercussions beyond calculations? This very feeling earned the well-known First War of Indian Independence in 1857, also known as the Sepoy Mutiny. The Sepoys were asked to use cartridges made from slaughtered cow fat, and what followed was a great revolt. This very issue united the whole India beyond religion, caste, creed, and sex. Mahatma Gandhi led the nation to independence in 1947 based on non-violence. He said, "A nation can be determined by the way it treats animals." Why is cow considered so important compared to any other animal? In the centuries-old cow economy of this country, nearly all basic necessities of life, like farming and manure, food and nourishment, transportation, fuel, housing and medicine, are woven around a pivotal cow. Milk is the first food a child takes to survive. It is to be the best and most complete of all foods, ideal food for infants and children, and a good supplementary food for adults. Similarly, other derivatives of cow milk, such as ghee, curd, and buttermilk, have unique properties and make a top-class food for humans.
The cow milk is supposed to be Ojaskara in Iowa. The cow milk is supposed to be Ojaskara. What is Ojaskara? Ojas is the sept of dhatu sara. The sara of all the dhatus, of all the tissues, is ojas. And it is said that when oja is destroyed, the life is no more there. That means it's so much life giving, and cow milk is equivalent to ojas.
Ahara shuddho. Ahara shuddho means your ahara. The food that you take has to be pure. And that pure food is only possible, the purest food is only possible, and only possible if we have cows.
This first-class food from cows cannot be replaced by milk of any other animal.
Milk from the indigenous cows is therapeutically better. It has got medicinal values. It has got certain products, certain constituents, like strontium, like cerebrosides, like small size fatty acid particles, which are very useful, because this small size of the fat globules is good, because that is the kind which will reach our brains to help us. The big sized fat globules from the buffalo milk are not as efficient to reach the human brains through our veins as the smart-sized from indigenous cattle are available and are able to support us in our thinking, in our working.
India is said to live in its villages. The total area of India is 32.6 crore hectares. A population of over 1 million is spread over this vast area. Of this, 82% is in approximately 7 lakh villages, with nearly half of these villages having less than 500 people. Agriculture is the mainstay of this country. What goes into agro-economy cannot be neglected, and cows are the center of agrarian-based living. For most of us, cow means only milk, whereas the terminology of cows includes cows, bulls, and bullocks. She is considered to be the mother, the very reason that we take milk from her. and bulls as the father, the very reason it plows the land to feed us. The fact that male buffaloes cannot be used for plowing is less known. Replacing the bulls with tractors is no solution too. Imagine, if bulls were to be disengaged from farms, how much more tractors need to be manufactured? How much more oil has to be imported? And all at what cost? In a letter to C.V. Raman, Albert Einstein says, "Tell the people of India that if they want to survive and show the world path to survive, then they should forget about tractor and preserve their ancient tradition of plowing." India today has nearly 40 crore acres under the crop. To switch this area over to mechanized farming, more than 5 million tractors will be required, against which we have today only a meager 31,000. To make these tractors, we will need 30 million metric tons of steel. Let's take the case of transportation. The fresh produce from the farm is transported from hundreds of interior villages to distribution centers across the subcontinent.
70% of your food today comes on bullock carts. If bullocks were not there in India today, God knows how much we would have to spend on importing petroleum for us.
Technology seems to surpass these transportation needs, but certainly cannot take it out, though it is attempting to do so. Cow dung, unlike excreta of any other animal, can be used as fuel, medicine, building material, and much more. Experts say there are over 101 uses of cow dung. It is considered to be the abode of wealth, a fundamental element of economy. If we were to use cow dung extensively, then energy needs can be met, traditional medicine can be revived, cheap fuel will be available to masses, food grains can be produced and made available at cheaper rates, fertilizers will be cheaply available to us, and soil will retain its fertility. Simply using cow dung as manure is what forms a fundamental part of the well-known organic farm.
I do admit that the yield will be low to begin with, and it may not catch up with the yield which you normally get with the chemical fertilizers, but the production is sustainable and the soil condition will never deteriorate. So you can do farming years after years, and which is known as sustainable farming. So here it is a sustainable consumption, sustainable production and sustainable farming. And if we take care of all these factors and then put it through an integration, then it will be possible for doing the real kind of organic farming, which is in great demand not only in our country but abroad also.
In terms of energy conservation, cow dung saves us 35 million tons of coal, 68 million tons of fuel. In other words, nearly 140 million trees of 20 to 25 years old would require to be felled each year otherwise. Recent experiments show yet another use of cow dung in running vehicles.
We at IIT Delhi developed the technology, patented the technology. Past 3 years we are producing a bio-CNG running the car in the campus and outside IIT Delhi.
Cow urine has been known to have medicinal benefits. In Sushrut Samhita, cow urine is considered to be elixir of life. It has all the essential elements that compensate for deficiency of the nutrients in the human body. It plays an important role in curing diabetes, blood pressure, asthma, and several other diseases. These unique properties of cow urine is tested and proved in the scientific world. Dr. Chauhan, whose team achieved US patent for bioenhancer property of cow urine, explains,
"It has been established scientifically nowadays that urine of indigenous cows is enhancing the immunity of the body, and thereby it is causing immunomodulatory effect and termed as universal vaccine, which can overcome any sort of the disease in the body, including the cancer. It has already been protected against tuberculosis and anti-cancer properties.
Cow is a form of pity. She gives everything and takes nothing in return. She seems to live for others and yet asks only for grass, a little land to go around. India, where more than 80% non-beef eaters aside, is now world's third largest exporter of cow meat. They are no more cared for, protected, nor utilized properly. With all the service they do to human race, they have only seen abuse, turned unproductive and slaughtered mercilessly, all in the name of economy.
In fact, countries like Britain have stopped giving licenses to slaughterhouses, whereas India is on a sort of a spree to increase their number, which is absolutely ridiculous.
What kind of economic policy is followed when a slaughtered cow fetches only 20,000 rupees, while the same cow in its lifetime can provide income of 3 lakh rupees by way of milk, urine and dung?
The value of the output from it would be around 3 lakhs, which is equivalent to 20,000 each year. That means we are foregoing a profit of 280,000 rupees by just selling cows to a slaughterhouse for having foreign exchange.
While the number of cattle population is decreasing rapidly, cows are dragged into slaughterhouses mercilessly.
There is a lot of increase in the population of human beings, and that has led to urbanization. Because of this urbanization, the grazing lands of the cattle have been reduced, have been squeezed, and now most of these are not available, or very little of them are available. Grazing lands have had a very good meaning, because when the grazing lands are there, then the animals can even eat the herbs which grow, and these come out in the form of milk, and then that goes into our diet, and that gives benefits to us. Now this combination has been broken by urbanization. With this scenario in front of us, where the number is coming down, and the rate of decrease in the number of indigenous population is also very high. It was 5% in the years 92 to 97, and this decrease was 10%. It was 5% only, but it was 10% in the next 5 years, from 97 to 2002-3. And the next census is presently happening, and we might see the figures, which we are afraid might come more than 10%, and if that is so, then we'll be really placed in a very odd situation of our indigenous breeds.
Home for 120 indigenous breed of cows, India is now watching the number coming down to 30, and all in nature.
Trouble for these animals start right before they are even slaughtered. While they're transported, wherever they're transported from, they're transported mostly in trains. For them to get to the city of destination, they're transported in a train. And in a train compartment, about 15 cows can actually be transported in one single compartment. But about 40 of these animals are crammed into one single compartment. And in this compartment, to try to adjust into that space, each of them keep moving here and there, and they hurt each other with their horns. And by the time they reach the destination, they hurt each other to an extent where most of them cannot even move, where most of them cannot even walk by then. And at the time of destination, where they have to be loaded into another transportation, like when they have to get into another lorry, because they cannot move, they take some chili that are dipped to get up from that place, or they take some chili and it's rubbed into their eyes, or it is rubbed into their noses, just so that they can move and they can be put into the next vehicle, where they are then transported into their vehicles, and they are taken from there into the slaughterhouse. They are transported to the next destination, in which they are taken into another open space, where again all the animals are crammed up with no space to stand or sit. Most of these animals are either beaten properly on their legs, or whatever, most of their legs are broken. Each of these animals, that pathetic in state to look at, most of them are in a bleeding condition. They are already bleeding, and they are very, very sad, in a very sad state. And by this time, most of them are in such a shape they cannot even stand. Most of them are quite sadly in a state of, they almost give up their life by then. They are all in a state of silent, basically silent giving up their life.
This culture of slaughterhouse was foreign to India. There was no slaughterhouse up until British came. They started slaughterhouses wherever they set up a cantonment. These slaughterhouses used the beef for meat and other extracts for various products that they manufacture, such as cartridges.
The animals are kept in this open space for about 4 days, without food and water. And within these 4 days, they become almost useless. And then there, at this point, either their eyes are poked out or their legs are broken, just so that a letter of uselessness can be given by the veterinarian, because according to the government of India, an animal in good health cannot be slaughtered. So just so that they can get this letter, their eyes are poked out or their legs are broken, basically just to obtain this certificate. And once that is done, then the animal is taken in for slaughter, the last place inside the slaughterhouse. Once the animal gets into the slaughterhouse, the hot water sprayed onto the animal for about 5 minutes, and the heat of this water was about 200 degrees. 5 minutes of this spray, the animal is not dead, but it's faint. It faints at this point. This is done so that the skin on the animal becomes soft, just so that this leather or this skin can be taken out easily from the body of the animal, because the leather cells, obviously. And then the animal is hung upside down on a conveyor belt, wherein it starts passing. All this is done in full view of other animals. Actually, even this is illegal. An animal is supposed to be slaughtered separately when another animal cannot watch it. But all this is done in full view of other animals, and all the other animals are doing this entire thing in distress, in fear. Now, when this animal is hung upside down on a conveyor belt, its throat is slit half, just so that the blood starts dripping. It cannot be fit completely because it cannot die completely. The blood has to drip away completely from its body, which will happen only if the animal is alive. It should not die completely. Then the blood starts dripping and the animal starts moving slowly on the conveyor belt. Then a hole is made in its stomach on one side and air is pumped into its stomach so that the body of the animal is swollen. And then the leather or the skin is removed even from the animal's body while it is still alive once again. And then the animal is cut into 4 pieces, head, the legs and the body and the different parts. And then this is how an animal is killed in a slaughterhouse. And this is what happens in our slaughterhouses in a very, very legal way, which is actually extremely illegal. But obviously, we are not allowed entry into these slaughterhouses. It's possibly easier to get into your parliament than to get into a slaughterhouse. And by the time you get entry into a slaughterhouse, all these things are well covered, and obviously you will get to see all these things. Each person in these slaughterhouses is paid a salary of about 50,000 to 75,000, and obviously you will not get to hear these horror stories from them because they are paid to keep their mouth closed. And I don't understand what kind of compassion a human has to see these kind of atrocities being committed against an animal. The same person who can call a dog, who can feel so much compassion for a simple dog, I do not understand how that same person can commit this kind of atrocity towards an animal as beautiful as a cow, which gives us milk, which gives us our curd, so many products, we use it so many ways, and we still kill it in such an inhuman way. I do not understand.
Cow slaughter, especially, is not proposed, preached, nor supported by any religion. In Christianity, commandments for life are described as definitive aphorisms. The seventh commandment says, "Thou shalt not kill," indicating one should not kill, leave alone, eat meat. Buddhism and Jainism propagate non-violence as the highest religion, while in Islam it is said, "He who takes pity even on a sparrow and spares its life, Allah will be merciful on him on the day of judgment." In a Ayatul Haywan, an Islamic religious text, there are clear evidences against cow slaughter.
Quran Kareem ke andar kahin par bhi aisa koi mention nahi hai, kahin par bhi aisa zikr nahi hai ki gaay ki qurbani jo hai musalman ke liye jaiz hai ya iski qurbani karni chahiye, aur na hi kahin par bhi Hazrat Muhammad ne aisa kaha hai. لیکن حضرت محمد کی کچھ احادیثیں ہمارے پاس موجود ہیں.
سناتن دھرم popularly known as Hinduism describes that there are seven mothers for a person and cow as one of the mother.
Just to show us the importance of this cow dung and cow urine, Krishna has come up with this incarnation in which he actually takes care of cows to show us the importance of it for our own benefit. Krishna doesn't benefit from it, we benefit by following him. So therefore, this cow is a provider of all our necessities. And therefore, it has been said in the Vedas that all the demigods who provide us our necessities for our day-to-day livelihood are in the cows. Because through the cow, we get all our livelihood in the best way, in the top-class way. If we do not have top-class food, we cannot have top-class people. Today, the whole economy is minimum petroleum. In every aspect of your life, we have petroleum. Even the button that I'm wearing has petroleum. It's a petroleum byproduct. Everything that we have around us, electricity, our clothes, our food has petroleum byproducts. So it is practically all pervading today. So if we take away petroleum on us all of a sudden today, away from our life, you can imagine what a collapse will take place. In the same manner, cows have their position, or has their position, in natural system. Cows are the mainstay of our society. Today, we are eliminating cows from our society. We are calling ourselves into a great economic danger, social danger, and a political danger, because we will become a 100% dependent nation. Cow gives us independence from such dependencies.
With this very understanding, freedom fighters sought after closure of slaughterhouses as the first agenda of the independent India in 1947, including Mahatma Gandhi.
Most of the leaders, based on its movement on the ground of cow protection and assured the people of India, assured the general public that as soon as Swaraj is achieved, we will ban the slaughter of cow. Particularly, I will make a mention of Mahatma Gandhi, who said that cow protection is most important to me than the independence itself. But as soon as the independence was achieved, whatever assurances were given, those assurances again became a matter of controversy. People or the leaders started thinking in terms of vote bank.
The Supreme Court, being cheesed off about this matter, gave a historical judgment in 2005.
Supreme Court in 2005, it was a golden day, I will say, it was a golden day in the history of Golmata. After 47 years of litigation, that the Supreme Court rendered a historical judgment upholding the ban on the slaughter of cow and its progeny. Supreme Court went on saying that this ban is in the interest of the public, and the legislature which provides for it is also right, that it has brought everywhere in the Article 1938 to make legislation banning the total slaughter of cow and its progeny, that is bull and bullocks. So this and other law enforcing agencies remain as a silent spectator, and they don't implement the law which provides for even punishment extending up to 2 years. But more cases are filed, and the cases which have been filed also, and even if reported by the public, the police does not take any action. Ultimately, solution lies in the fact that we must spread this message among the people. We must disseminate the information about the utility of the cow and its products. Then only the farmers will be ready to keep these animals, maintain these animals in his own farm, and will be able to save the cow and dispose it.
World Health Organization also opened that by the year 2020, the antibiotic drugs will lock their efficacy against the bacterial infections. And that's why they are looking some alternatives to control the infections in coming years. I am advisor, temporary advisor to the WHO since last 7 years, working on the pesticide-induced immunopathology, that is the immunosuppression or autoimmune disorders caused by the pesticides. And we have prepared a document on environmental health criteria for the WHO and IPCS. This institute on cow science and technology is necessary to carry out the research on cow urine induced immunomodulation in human beings and animals to control the infections in next centuries.
When you talk about the panchadramyas, there are more dharmas. Like for example, Atavakshira, Dharini, then Bhuta, Gomudra, Gomaya. There are a lot of other dharmas like butter, buttermilk, kakra, and then cream. A lot of other products are available at the cow. As a Ayurvedic Vaidya, if you ask me to practice Ayurveda without these products, it's not possible for me. It's not possible for me to address the prevention of diseases without the dharmas. The most, the priority, if you ask me what is the priority today, the priority is to conserve all the breeds of India, to do a lot of investigations into the qualities, to do a lot of scientific research into how they are useful, where to do, how it can be useful for the society.
I therefore see that unless such a change occurs, and unless the NGOs and the government moves towards re-establishing the cow in our culture, I'm afraid we will not be a stable food security, a country with stable food security. History has told us any country which is strong can be so only in terms of food security.
जो हमारा राष्ट्रीय सम्मेलन हुआ उस राष्ट्रीय सम्मेलन में हमने जो 30 अगस्त 2020 दिल्ली में हुआ उसमें जो हमने अलग अलग प्रस्ताव पास किए तो उसमें सबसे पहला प्रस्ताव हमने यही पास किया कि गौ की रक्षा होनी चाहिए और उसकी रक्षा करने के लिए कोई ऐसा कानून बने। ये हम सम्मानों ने ही उस प्रस्ताव को पास किया था, हमारे आंदोलन के लोगों ने पास किया था। इसके अतिरिक्त हम लगातार इसके ऊपर दो अक्षय के ऊपर कार्य कर रहे हैं और आज हमारा 19 राज्यों में हमारी संस्था जा चुकी है और 19 राज्यों में लगातार हम इस कार्यक्रम को आगे बढ़ा रहे हैं।
पीपल मस्ट कम फॉरवर्ड एंड दे शुड इम्प्रेस अपॉन द पॉलिटिकल लीडर्स दैट द बैन ऑन द स्लॉटर ऑफ कव एंड डिस्पोजरी इज इन द नेशनल इंटरेस्ट।
लेट ऑल ऑफ अस टेक पार्ट एंड बिकम पार्ट ऑफ द सॉल्यूशन। However, what could be more shocking is that unintentionally we are all part of the problem. The first war of independence in 1857 was due to usage of beef fat in cartridges. Today, your toothpaste, toilet soap, shaving cream, and host of cosmetic and consumer products either contain gelatin, glycerin, tallow, stearic acid, and many more, all derived from beef. The good news is that alternatives are available. Mahatma Gandhi stressed Gram Swaraj or village empowerment. Unless we have self-sufficient, locally governed and God-conscious agrarian-based communities, the final solution will not come forth.
Applying the principles of self-sufficiency, which is based on God-conscious principles, which includes the presence very much of realized individuals such as Brahmanas, and which has at the center and at the beginning focal point the protection of cows. There is no way the society can be properly organized, and there is no solution.
Each one of us need to take part in making such farm communities. If sanity still has its place in this sacred country, then what is needed to realize that it is the 11th hour? An hour left to come together and lay down a roadmap for recovery, an hour to gain true independence. Let us save our cows to save ourselves, our planet.
Obviously, the main focus was on cow protection, as we mentioned earlier, for those who were not present at the beginning of the presentation. Cows and brahmanas are essential backbone, we could say, pillars for establishing and maintaining a brahminical culture, which can only help establish varnashram communities as existed previously when God conscious leadership was there all over the world. So anyways, we'll take some questions if there are any right now, and either, yeah.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for my presentation. I have one question.
Are you good?
Are you
good? Yes, go ahead, I think. Can you
hear me? We are serving to the cows, but now it's very difficult. Like we have here Gaushala, I saw so many Gaushala. Maintaining cows is very difficult. If we have field, big field, then there is no problem, but we don't have field. That is very difficult to survey the cows. So much costly, like we have every month 4 lakh rupees for 360 cows. And I have another question is, another international society, the cow protection, they make one rules like we have here. We stop the breeding for further. And I heard in some pastoral they mentioned, we cannot stop the breeding. This is one of offense. What your...
What is the solution? That is one additional reason why we need to establish communities where there will be sufficient land available. It is not that we are meant to maintain the cows. Cows will maintain us. If we apply the principles which are given in our shastras properly, it is true, as you point out, not only here in Vrindavan, in other places where we have goshalas, there is difficulty in properly caring for or maintaining. That is because one of the reasons is that the whole culture today is not favoring, not supporting. In previous times, the kings directly would give protection, or vaishyas who had sufficient wealth, etc., like this. And also, there was wide distribution. We don't have this today. This support is not there. And therefore, until and unless we make, or take rather, very concrete steps to establish rural communities of devotees who understand the importance, both material and spiritual, of our cows, then the solution will not come so easily. So that, in other words, a long-term solution, there is a solution, and that long-term solution is actually establishing Varnashram Dharma. This is the first documentary we have presented in connection with Varnashrama, because actually that is where our consciousness, we need to develop our consciousness in regards to the importance and the necessity of properly caring for cows, who will actually protect us. We are talking about cow protection, but actually cows will protect us by providing us all the necessities if we follow the formula that Krishna is giving. That is there in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So it is very, very important for all of us as devotees, and it is for that reason that Srila Prabhupada gave so much of stress to introducing, implementing what we call the Varnashrama mission. And I understand that whether it is here in Vrindavan or similar problems, there of course at Goshala in Mayapur and possibly other places as well. So the economics of cow protection will more naturally, easily, and more simply be realized once we follow the proper process given by our acharyas and given in the Shastra. Yes?
And about stopping the breeding.
I'm sorry?
Stop the breeding.
Regarding the breeding, yes. That that is also connected with the long-term solution. We know, in other words, when we read the description of Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan in those days, is it 900,000 cows, huge numbers of cows, people used to maintain, just like I'm coming from Cambodia. Cambodia is a place where they have huge numbers of cows even to this day, because actually everybody is out in the country. There's huge areas. So these things will more naturally be resolved, the problems that are there, when we come back to more natural, when we follow or apply the natural system. There are ways, of course, to minimize unnecessary or overproduction or breeding of cows, and I think that is available from our Ministry of Cow Protection, Balabhadra Prabhu. And although it may not be always possible, by taking some of the measures he has given, such as separating the bulls and the cows, various other methods he has given, at least it can minimize so that it is not totally out of control. It is an issue, it is a problem, and again, we should note that for whatever problems that are there, the solutions are there in our Shastra, the solutions are there given by our acharyas, and we need to more deeply study. It is said that Sahadeva, the younger brother of the Pandavas, as you well know, he was so expert in maintaining cows, looking after cows, even by smelling their urine, he could tell which breed of cows, etc. So it's a very big topic, and there are many issues involved just in regards to cows, and we need to have some of our devotees more deeply study this whole matter and see it intimately connected, directly connected with the whole question of Varnashrama. Something that to this day within our society we have been very slow to recognize and unfortunately slow to implement as well. Okay. There was one more question here.
Something very practical in the sense there is an appeal in the video of making this message available. So I wonder if that video is available for distribution As I see, you have books here. This is the video also available.
Hare Krishna. As you see, it was just a premiere show, as we mentioned also. And more corrections are required in this present documentary status. It was put up for the seminar purpose that we had in Mayapur. It's undergoing editing right now in Secunderabad. And it will come out in a professional way and eventually be available. And we'll take down your address and so on and so forth so that we can communicate when it will be available and what, you know, how we can make available.
Yeah, it means that at present we don't have the documentary available, but we do have plans to make it available. Any other question? Comment? Yes, this is another group. Can someone give the mic?
All right, I'm not up to date on what you're doing yourself in terms of events and the whole program, crop protection and Varnashram. Could you give a little rundown on the history of your contribution and what you're doing now and what we can do as a group or individually?
Yes, actually, the reason I have come to Vrindavan was specifically to share in some discussions with a small group or a committee, small group of devotees who were appointed last September. Those of you who are not from India may not know that we have here within the country what is called the regional governing body, RGB. They are overseeing the management, the preaching activities of ISKCON Society in India. So, going back to year 2002, at that time I was preaching in Indonesia. Those who came a little earlier might have seen some photos from some of our projects. We established a number of projects, the most prominent one on the island of Sumatra, the year 1999. So year 2002, the idea came to set up an organization for that purpose. We created a website. The name of that organization is actually written at the end of the video, a documentary. You may not have seen it. It was shown a little bit quickly. It is called Global Varnashram Educational Cultural Organization, or GLOESCO. We have pamphlets about this organization, which was established on the internet and was registered actually in 2005. We have a base or headquarters in South India, and we just recently, a few weeks ago, held our seminar, first seminar in Srinath Mayapur in connection with the Mayapur Institute for Higher Education. We are in contact through this organization with various devotees around the world. We are also in contact with our leaders here in India to see how the Varnashrama mission, basically this GLOESCO organization, was established. Was, you could say, an initiative taken by myself and a few other devotees in order to promote the whole ideology of Varnashram. So we are meeting actually with the leaders here in India next month, that is in Srinath Mayapur. They're having a 3 or 4 day meeting, and they have established this committee, as I mentioned earlier. A number of activities are ongoing right now. For example, we are publishing some literature. We have established our own Varnashrama Book Trust. We have recently also established a Varnashram Support Fund. The whole seminars, the seminars given in Mayapur, were actually sponsored by this Varnashrama Support Fund. we're still very much in the beginning stages. We also have a Varnashram research team. This documentary was actually put together by this Varnashram support team. And this team is actually headed by Harsha Prabhu, who's sitting beside me here. He has a team of about 20-25 devotees in Secunderabad. And there's all kinds of research ongoing. We have come out with two new books this year. Our first book was Make Vrindavan Villages. I think most of you have heard Srila Prabhupada's statement, make Vrindavan, make like Vrindavan, because Vrindavan is a place of cows where Krishna Balaram used to look after cows every day. That was their main activity. So our second book came out a few weeks ago. It is called Varnashram Education. Education, of course, is a very big topic, but very, very essential. What we need to understand, general devotees as well as our leaders within our ISKCON society, is that, and this is very, very crucial, very important, I would say, for the future of our ISKCON society, for the future of the world as well, that the system, Prabhupada writes to that effect, the system of Varnashrama, Dharma, is in itself the perfect and ideal educational system. It is the complete educational system given by Krishna. I mean, what a better system can we have? Krishna has instituted, established Varnashrama Dharma, where the four Varnas and four Ashramas are there, and of course within not only Brahmachari Ashram, but throughout all the different Ashrams, education is an ongoing activity towards, of course, self-realization. But the uniqueness of our education, of our Vedic education, is that it addresses both the material and spiritual levels, you see, whereas modern education is only concerned about, that is the defect, the material side, and the purpose, of course, is completely different. So that is why one of the important discussions we had in Mayapur during the seminar was regarding village technologies, village technology, very important. If we're going to live in a simple way, it means we need to learn how people used to live previously, not that long ago as well. So these are some of the activities. One can find out more about our activities by visiting. We have a few, actually we have about four websites which describe in a general way, and some of them are related to some of our projects here in India, Indonesia, and other places as well. So we invite devotees after your presentation. Mm-hmm. After the devotees, they should first watch your presentation, and we'd like to hear some feedback, of course, after your presentation as well. And then afterwards, we'll be here if any devotees would like to see some of these videos. Hare Krishna. Anyone? Quick last question. We have maybe 1 or 2 minutes before. Your presentation is ready, but is it on the table? Yeah,
yeah. Okay. There's no questions. I can take a little bit of the review of the video that's coming on. You may know, if you have seen it, GBC gave a standing ovation to this new concept. This is for the planetarium, new temple to be built in Mayapur. I've been working in conjunction with Operation Babananda, Babuj, and a whole team of Russian devotees working there making this 3D rendering. It's very graphic, very virtual reality. So when you see it, it's like you're walking through an actual event that's already constructed. When I first saw the video, I said, what do you need me for? It's already done. But I've been working with the concepts, and now after this video, it's been refined even further. And in June, we start the interior, and then construction starts October. So the project has been given complete approval to GBC, and Ambrish, he announced that there's no problem anybody collecting anyone's known, because I'll be funding the whole thing. And that
Everybody got up and gave a standing ovation. There's no problem. He's got the money. And so he's dedicated Prabhupada told him to do this, and he's been since it was 75, 74, he got the instruction from Prabhupada in Detroit. So it's been his concern and his intention to do it all along. But now you said that this is the first time that we've been able to answer what Prabhupada wanted. Often Prabhupada made the comment about, a spiritual master asked for milk, why do you bring water? And the design that, so many designs have been already put forward and a great amount of money has been lost for various reasons, millions. So this design went very smooth, very fast, and within the last year and a half, come to this point where all the engineering is ready. Construction can start any time, but just a few things to clean up legally, and then construction goes full steam. Now, there's been criticism along the way, and I'd like to point to that now. That first, that's jamming something new into a small space, when there's so much space in Mayapur. Now, Prabhupada wanted a city built in Mayapur. But what we're going to be seeing now in the video, take note how the actual new construction fits into the old framework. It's where right now the gardens are present in that big fountain. That all shifts further south. And then this big, huge complex fits very snugly inside the whole thing. For the reason that the communist government has stopped all construction on the property, except for the original area, which was like 14 acres, original purchase. And there is where the site is located. And the criticism that looks like just another version of the Capitol building license in D.C.